Chapter 17, Opportunity, Innovation, and Collaboration. Innovation. In the world of business, innovation has become the holy grail. If you can create new processes, products, and services that customers want to pay for, you are performing magic. People like Galileo, with his new telescope, were what we would call innovative. Gutenberg with the printing press, Henry Ford and the Model T, Steve Jobs with computers at Apple and computer-animated movies at Pixar, and Elon Musk with Tesla and SpaceX are other iconic examples. What sets these innovators apart from others is that they were able to take several component elements and combine them into something that was revolutionary. One of my heroes is a Frenchman named Augustin Jean Fresnel. Fresnel was born in the late 1700s in the time of Napoleon. He was fascinated with light, and he spent much of his time researching and studying how it worked. Fresnel investigated diffraction and how beams of light interfere with each other, creating mysterious patterns. He invented a special type of optical lens, now called a Fresnel lens, for lighthouses. Lighthouses have been used for thousands of years to help ships avoid crashing into the coastline. They started out as fires built on hilltops and eventually evolved into what amounted to giant candles that used reflector dishes or lenses to create and beam the light. The wonderful book, A Short Bright Flash, by Teresa Levitt, tells the story of how Fresnel created an innovative solution. In the early 1800s, sailors were complaining that French lighthouses were inferior to English versions. Fresnel was the engineer on the project, and in tests, he had to repeatedly climb to the top of the Arc de Triomphe in Paris to secure the equipment, discovering in the process how difficult it was to get the current reflector technology to make a bright beam of light. Fresnel saw that most of the light coming from the lamp flame was being wasted by the technology being used. Half of the light disappeared because even with a perfect mirror, half of the light is absorbed and only half is reflected. Not to mention the many other issues with making curved mirrors a couple of hundred years ago. He realized if he could create a large glass lens that he could collect and project a lot more of that light and make the lighthouse far more powerful. But a huge glass lens that would collect and beam this much light would have to be huge, very thick, and impossibly heavy. Someone had already tried it, and the glass had to be made so thick that most of the light was absorbed before it went out the other side. In a flash of brilliance, Fresnel saw the solution in his mind. Build a lens by arranging small prisms in an array that was shaped like a giant lens. If you've never seen a Fresnel lens in a lighthouse, it's worth taking a moment to look them up to get a sense of what a masterpiece these things are. To build his new innovation, he had to commission special glassmakers to make his new puzzle piece prisms. Fresnel combined various types of knowledge and technology together with his new multi-prism lens design, putting it all together into one unit designed for this unique and valuable purpose. If he could get it right, it would save many lives and a lot of money and enable a new era of world trade. In his first public demonstration, the new lens design created a light that was so much brighter than competing reflector technology that it was obvious that the new design had instantly made the old technology obsolete. When Fresnel built a lens for use in an actual lighthouse, it increased the distance that you could see the light from something like a few miles to 33 miles away. And it used half the fuel as well. Now that's an innovation. The new lighthouse lens design spread around the world, and every port that installed one became a hub of trade, literally lighting the way to the global economy we enjoy today. In his legendary book, The Innovator's Dilemma, Clayton Christensen theorizes that much innovation in business is what he calls disruptive innovation. The innovation of the automobile was disruptive to the horse-drawn carriage industry. Digital cameras disrupted traditional film technology. Wikipedia disrupted the traditional encyclopedia model. Uber disrupted the taxicab model. Fresnel was a disruptive innovator. The competition never saw it coming. A new design or concept that offers a 10x or 20x price performance ratio is a total game changer. Technology is now making this type of thing the new normal. In the past, an innovation could last a long time by making small incremental changes before being made obsolete by radical innovation. Now everything is up for grabs. Something interesting about disruptive innovation is that it often comes from people who work for a bigger company who see an opportunity that the bigger company doesn't want to pursue. Fresnel was part of a team that was installing reflector dishes to figure out which one was best for making lighthouses. He realized that he could create a better design himself, so he set out to do it. In fact, the dilemma that innovators face is this: if you have something that's working, is it worth investing money to find a better way to do things, and in the process threaten or cannibalize your own proven system for making a living? In their book Positioning, Al Reese and Jack Trout point out that new product and service categories are almost always created by outsiders, and very rarely are they produced by established companies. IBM dominated the computer business, and they were perfectly positioned to win the software game. But they didn't. Bill Gates won with Microsoft. Microsoft was perfectly positioned to win the search engine game, but they didn't. Larry Page and Sergey Brin won with Google in the 2000s. Google was perfectly positioned to win the social networking game, but they didn't. Mark Zuckerberg won with Facebook. You'll see this pattern across industries and throughout time if you look for it. Banks and credit card companies should have won online payments, but a little startup called PayPal beat them to it. It certainly helped to have Peter Thiel and Elon Musk as founders. New entrants beat out established players in emerging categories so consistently that it's worth closely considering what's going on. I believe that this dynamic has a root cause that's relatively simple to explain. When the time for change is ripe and new technology and knowledge are emerging that could be combined to produce an innovative solution, the right combination of new ideas, technology, people, and other raw material is only meeting inside of a very few minds. These are intelligent, curious minds that are personally fascinated with how these new things and ideas work and with combining them to create innovative solutions, and often to make money as well. Big companies are busy growing their core ideas and taking care of their sacred cows, and they are strongly incentivized to believe in a model of reality that supports their current money-making activities. The game-changing idea that spawns the next industry is usually far enough from the way that they do things that they won't see it. It literally takes someone who is thinking much smaller, and often someone from the outside, to really understand the opportunity. The story of Tim Berners-Lee, who combined things like domain names, hypertext, and a communication protocol to create the World Wide Web, is a great example of several new ideas and technologies merging together inside of one mind to create something revolutionary. Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak built some of the first personal computers by putting together several existing pieces of technology in a new way, setting the stage for Apple, which became the most valuable public company in the world. Satoshi Nakamoto, the mysterious inventor of the blockchain and of Bitcoin, combined and wove together several elements of technology to create a masterpiece that allows you to own and trade unforgeable digital assets. Each of these innovations has made multiple people into billionaires, and it's fascinating to think that they and most other big innovations were created by individuals and small groups of people who were combining elements to solve new problems and create new forms of value. Vertical innovation. I would like to introduce a concept that I call vertical innovation to draw a distinction that I find particularly useful when engaging in creative work, entrepreneurship, design, and artistic endeavors. I borrow this term from developmental psychology, where they speak of vertical development, and from systems dynamics, which incorporates emergent properties. We could just as easily call it developmental innovation, but I prefer the term vertical innovation, so that's what I'll use here. If you look at how reality seems to organize, you see this pattern of components on one level coming together in groups to create higher order emergent properties. Remember the example of individual ants acting together in synchrony to create the emergent property or entity of the ant colony? Consider subatomic particles coming together and uniting in the particular combination that forms a stable emergent property called an atom on a higher level or order, and how atoms come together, sharing electrons to form bonds as they create the foundation for emergent properties called molecules in a higher dimension. It's this interesting ability to organize on your own level and be yourself, while at the same time organizing in such a way that another entity forms beyond on a higher order, that's so interesting. Molecules come together with other elements and form emergent cells on a higher vertical level. Cells come together to form tissues on a higher order. Tissues come together to form organs on a higher order. And organs come together to form bodies. Individual cells remain in sovereign integrity in the process of living in these larger entities of the tissues that emerge beyond them. To imagine vertical orders of emergence, I like to visualize an atom with a proton and neutron at the center united in a nucleus, with an electron whirring around in an orbit like planets orbiting the sun. If you were standing on the electron and you could see other atoms and the nucleus, they would look like tiny stars far away in the distance. From the level of the electron, everything is very tiny and moving around very quickly. But from the perspective of the molecule that this atom is part of, things are very different. At that scale, the atom is a unified cloud of an entity, united with others to form an even larger structure. At each order, a new type of structure or entity emerges, and each of these structures is only visible as a structure from the higher order or higher vertical level. You can also imagine a cell composed of billions of molecules, all self-orchestrating and acting together in a great society. From the perspective of one molecule, reality might look like a great school of fish, with you being one of the fish swimming around with the others. But from the perspective of the cell, you are this entire planet of interesting living ecological dynamism emerging in a higher dimension, beyond the scale of comprehension to the individual molecules that compose you. This kind of thing is very weird to think about, and even weirder to try to talk about, especially when you start using terms like entity to discuss them and suggesting that they exist in different dimensions of reality, which I tend to gravitate toward. But something is going on here, and there appears to be a universal pattern of force that seems to invoke each self-quantized and self-organized level to join together with others and form a stable foundation for something novel and dynamic to emerge around beyond it. Arthur Kessler coined the term holon to describe something that is both a whole and a part. It's a whole individual, complete entity on one level, while at the same time being a part or building block of something else on a higher level. He also created the term holarchy to describe networks of these holons, so that we could think about this model more dimensionally. I believe that the terms holon and holarchy are in a small group of the most valuable concepts that have been created by humans so far, as they give us a way to conceptualize this vertical, nested, emergent aspect of manifest reality. Ken Wilber, who I learned about the holon model from, also makes a subtle and important point about the concept of transcendence. Most people use the term transcend to mean something like go past or get beyond. But when they use it, they are implying that they have thrown off or discarded what came before. Someone who says, I have transcended my need for approval, or I have transcended my compulsion to have sex, is typically trying to say that they no longer need approval, or that they no longer compulsively have sex. But Ken Wilber points out that to actually transcend something, you include it. Moving beyond doesn't mean rejecting or denying. It actually means accepting and embracing in a higher order structure, identity, or model. When an atom transcends the subatomic particles that compose it, the atom doesn't reject them or deny that they exist anymore. It gathers them together, weaves them into the fabric of itself, each a precious and absolutely necessary part of the atom's existence. A body that transcends the organs that compose it does not try to escape from them or deny them individual integrity. The body is itself the organs, plus something far more at a higher level in a higher dimension of existence. When I am creating something new in my life, whether it be a new course that I'm going to teach, a new design for a logo, a new product or service for my business, a new collaboration, a new social group or mastermind, I use the ideas of emergent properties, vertical orders, holons, and transcendence as my models. To me, a real innovation is creating something on a higher level. It's producing an emergent property that transcends and includes the best of what already exists now in a higher dimensional design that produces a new type of value that hasn't been produced before. This is what I'm talking about when I say vertical innovation. This concept has been revolutionary for me in my life as it really expands the creative canvas in my imagination to include not only making something new, something that has never existed before, but also doing it in a way that honors and includes the best of what has come before. I have designed this book to be a vertical innovation and the information to produce an emergent property inside of your mind when it is read and understood. I have taken the best of what I've learned about entrepreneurship, mental models for success, emotional self-regulation, collaborative partnership, productivity, and much more, and organized it to transmit a central organizing concept called opportunity to you. I'll use the term here in capitalized form to denote a more abstract and fundamental principle of life, growth, creativity, success, relationship, and evolution. As I endeavor to transfer this dynamic and important concept over to your mind through the channel of the written word, I am imagining the spirit of opportunity, made up of these many ideas that I've learned in my life, coming to you and blessing you with the hands to create, the heart to feel, and the inner eyes to see opportunity throughout your life. When I imagine opportunity as a kind of fairy spirit made of dozens of light concepts, each a fractal emergent built from many smaller ideas and examples, the concept of opportunity and also of vertical innovation make more sense to me and are more relatable. I realize that this visualization borders on mystical fantasy, but somehow imagining opportunity as an emergent spirit that transcends and includes the unique combination of living concepts in this book makes it more real and gives me something to strive for. It inspires me. When I am working on a new design for something or experimenting with combining elements from different domains to see what happens, I keep the idea of higher order emergent properties in the back of my mind. I'm always looking to produce something that is not only a novel combination of elements, but also that special extra something that is the mark of an emergent phenomenon. When approached the way I'm imagining it, you are able to freely combine elements from many domains of life, knowing that the more diverse the combination of elements, the better and more robust the emergent innovation is likely to be. Don't just use a new fabric in your clothing design. Take some inspiration from Lady Gaga and use a disco ball as your starting material for your dress. Infinite pent-up emergent value. Once you understand emergence and creating value on a higher order or in a higher dimension, it opens up possibilities that didn't exist before you understood the model. And once your mind acclimates to thinking in the vertical dimension, you eventually have a big realization that there is going to be an infinite progression of vertical development and emergent innovation in the future. Combining elements on one level to create a higher order value is going to be a never-ending evolutionary process. The way I see it, this higher order value is essentially pent up and waiting to be produced, created, and released. There is an infinite supply of pent up emergent value. Because most people are thinking sequentially and linearly and not thinking vertically and in terms of emergence, they are missing the possibility of tapping into what I believe is the greatest domain of opportunity of all. Value and opportunity are different for a cell than they are for an organ. And it's different for organs than it is for bodies. Opportunity and value are different on different levels. And when you start looking for how you can combine elements on this level to produce and create the next level, you can open doorways to places that will change your life. Scenario planning. By imagining the handful of the most likely ways that a situation will turn out, you prepare your mind to spot the early signs that one of the futures is coming true. I'm fascinated with people who call themselves futurists, and with those that are just great at seeing what's going to happen, whatever they call themselves. One of the brilliant ones is Peter Schwartz. He wrote a book titled The Art of the Long View. Inside, he lays out the methodology for a powerful method called scenario planning that Shell has used for decades to become very successful in the highly competitive energy market. The idea is to envision what the most likely outcomes will be in the future, and then think through what the signs will be that one of the scenarios is coming true. As you do this, create a series of stories about how the future will unfold, and you'll then know what to watch for as road signs along the way. Shell has used this approach to spot signals of oil crises, stock market crashes, and cultural transformations, and then use these signals to better position themselves for the future. If you don't think through what the most likely different scenarios are for the future of your opportunity, then you are far more likely to fall prey to things like confirmation bias, sunk cost bias, and general attachment to things going the way you want them to. On the other hand, if you think through the different types of scenarios that might play out, and then ask yourself what the signs will be that one of them is coming true, you'll be far more likely to spot the pattern in advance and see the opportunity contained within it. I remember reading a story several years ago about a big computer manufacturer that had created several scenarios and was using them to watch for signs that one of them was unfolding. At one point, a huge storm threatened a country that made many of their components, and they realized that if the storm hit this country and shut down the plants, that it would really hurt them. They took action and bought up all of the inventory that was available on the market as insurance. Sure enough, the storm hit the country full force and shut down all of the plants. It was because they had been paying attention and thinking through the scenarios that could unfold, the signs that one of them was happening and how to respond, that they survived and outperformed their competitors who were left without the parts to build computers. If you don't actually think through the potential future scenarios and then ask yourself or your group what the signs are that would indicate that one of them was coming true, then you won't spot the signals in the first place. This is the key. You will misinterpret one of the signals as being no big deal rather than recognizing it as the indicator that things have potentially changed course and that you'll need to make new plans and take new actions. Scenarios, in this sense, turn out to be stories about how the future will unfold. Most people are uncomfortable holding multiple conflicting stories or ideas in their minds, and so they skip doing exercises like this one. It's easier to just pick one story that you prefer and stick with it until forced to change. But this exercise of thinking through diverse potential future scenarios and then mapping out how they might unfold along with key signs and indicators to watch for really prepares you for the future that I believe we're moving into. And remember, the point isn't to predict the future here. It's to pre-imprint your mind to be ready for the road signs that indicate that one future is manifesting versus another future. It's to pre-vision a set of indicators so that when one of them happens, you say, oh yes, I've seen this before. I know what this might mean. Let me consider this in a new way. Opportunity collaboration. When you need to innovate, you need collaboration. Marissa Mayer. To take opportunity to the next level, let's look at what's possible when you team up and collaborate with others. In this section, we're going to learn about the power of collaboration and partnership to create and take advantage of opportunities. Consider the distinction between these four words and their definitions. Competition, rivals competing for resources, status, or prizes, characterized by the perception of there being winners and losers, can be highly motivating, but also perceived as zero sum. Cooperation, working together toward a common value or purpose, characterized by a spirit of common interest or struggle. We're all in this together. Collusion, working together for an illicit or immoral purpose, typically used to describe illegal cooperation, characterized by secrecy and the danger of being caught. Collaboration, combining and synchronizing diverse skills to produce a multiplication of value, characterized by the production of a higher order or emergent level of benefit. Each life level and form specializes in a particular way of making a living. Together, these forms work to create emergent higher order entities and higher order forms of value. You may have heard of Adam Smith's pin factory. If you have one person working in a pin factory and they have to do all the different jobs, make the wire and cut it, sharpen the tips, make the pin heads, solder them together, they can only make a little handful of pins in a day. But if you take a group of 10 people, and they all specialize, and each of them does one job, and they set it up in a factory, they can make 48,000 pins. Adam Smith uses this example to describe what he calls division of labor. It's a powerful example of what's possible when we specialize and when we work together toward a common outcome. But there's something else going on here that deserves closer attention. It's not just the division of labor, it's the specialization, the coordination, the synchronization, and the orchestration of the people involved. The term division of labor obscures the magic of what's happening, in my opinion. There's actually a miracle happening here. M.C. Escher created a famous series of fine art pieces using a technique known as tessellation. This is the process of arranging shapes so that they repeat in a pattern. In Escher's series of transformation prints, he uses tessellations in a remarkable fashion, subtly changing shapes row by row to connect two completely different shapes. For example, in Sky and Water 1 and Sky and Water 2, fish at the bottom of the images and birds at the top of the images are connected by rows of shapes that make it appear as if the fish are morphing into birds, or vice versa. The centers of the images are made up of tessellated abstract bird and fish shapes that fit together perfectly in a repeating pattern. To view examples of excellent tessellations for reference, visit the galleries at mcescher.com. Tessellation is mathematical art, as it requires exacting precision. It is my favorite metaphor to use when thinking about and describing collaboration and collaborative partnership. In order to create a tessellation, you must fine-tune and sculpt your starting shapes in order to fit them together into a pattern that works as a unified composition. It's the diversity of the images plus the fitting together of the different shapes that creates the surprise and the magic. Likewise, in order to successfully collaborate, two or more diverse people must learn about themselves and about each other, and then work to both divide the tasks that need to be accomplished and also synchronize their efforts by sculpting themselves to fit better with the other or others involved. There's an artistic dimension to collaboration. Steve Jobs described the team that built the first Macintosh computer as being composed of artists, musicians, business people, and scientists all working together and fitting 1,000 different elements together in order to create the final beautiful product. One of Steve's favorite metaphors for collaboration was putting plain rocks together into a rock tumbler with soap and grit and then letting them crash into and polish each other in the process. My first job was working for a coppersmith in a metal shop, making copper kitchenware and artistic decorations. We use tumblers to clean and polish the copper, and these devices do have a type of magic. You put in the dirty, unpolished material, and you come back a few hours later and take out shiny, new-looking surfaces. When you work together in collaborative relationship with a person who has different skills and a different way of seeing reality, you activate a sort of relational binocular vision. You can see not only the two perspectives or the two views, but you get a third type of vision, almost like a relationship depth perception that either view alone doesn't possess. When you have a collaboration with different people who have different skills, you get the same kind of thing. You get this third power that's beyond the power of the individuals. When you have two different people that see the world in different ways, the combination can do something that no one person can do. That's the essence of collaboration. The more diverse your competencies, the more powerful the collaboration. This is very counterintuitive. It's more challenging to synchronize different worldviews, different skills, and different values, but it's worth it. You get a sort of hybrid vigor of the collaboration. In biology, hybrid vigor is when you take two subspecies or two very different strains that can still reproduce, and then you marry those two together. You get an offspring that has more vigor, that has higher fitness than either of the parents did. It's the same thing with collaboration. If you have very diverse competencies, you can get a higher form of value. For example, let's say that you're starting a business and you want to start the business with a partner. If you're a great designer, and your partner is a great software developer, that's an extremely powerful potential collaboration. Or if one of you is great at people skills, having social relationships with people, and one of you is great at numbers, maybe not so good with people, but good with numbers, that's going to be a more powerful collaboration. If one of you is good with the big picture, more strategic, and one of you is better with the details, like managing the checklist, that's going to be a more powerful collaboration. It's all about diverse competencies. This pattern extends to the next level and also applies to collaborative groups. As you develop the ability to collaborate, try using this skill to coordinate and tessellate entire groups. Lead two diverse groups to take advantage of a shared opportunity. The emergent creative power of diverse groups is awesome, and it's worth the effort to create. If you grow an organization, you will find that you need to get different types of groups of people that have different ways of viewing the world and different value sets working together. This is one way to tessellate groups for collaborative synergy. Just like there are classic personality differences, like the conflicts that arise between an extroverted person and an introverted person, or between someone that's more rational and someone that's more emotional, these same kinds of things emerge when you're dealing with people that are from different groups within organizations. Some of the classic conflicts that show up are the conflict between the sales team and between the product team, because the sales team goes out and they promise the world. They say to clients, "Yes, we can make you anything you want," in order to make the sale. They get the deal and they bring it home, and then the product team says, "We're not going to build that. It'll mess everything up." Then the sales team says, "But we brought in the money," and so on. These classic conflicts happen throughout organizations. When you can learn how to resolve these dilemmas and help integrate and align them, you can get a very powerful organization. One of the great things about collaborating with others is it brings a natural accountability. When you have a partner who is also invested in an outcome, you have someone that can see your blind spots as well. When you need to supercharge your power to take advantage of a big opportunity, many or even most times, it's better to do it in a collaborative partnership. In Silicon Valley, many venture capitalists believe that the optimal number of founders for a startup is 2. The key that I want you to take away from this section is that there is a different level of opportunity available when you are collaborating. It's a higher possibility, a higher form of value that's available. 2 hydrogen atoms and 1 oxygen atom can serve valuable functions alone, but when they find each other, tessellate, coordinate, and combine efforts, they can create something much more profound, water. Keep in mind the higher opportunity that collaboration represents. It's often more challenging, but it's worth it. Reminder, get a summary of this entire book, plus written implementation exercises for every chapter, additional bonus sections, and access to a free class to help you discover your best opportunities by visiting opportunitybonus.com. Opportunity, innovation, and collaboration. In business, innovation has become the holy grail. It's worthwhile to study and learn how innovation works so you can do it in business and life. To me, innovation involves combining several component elements into something new, different, and better. A personal hero of innovation is Augustin Jean Fresnel, who was born in the late 1700s. He invented a new way of making lenses for lighthouses that worked approximately 10 times as well, used half of the fuel, and that saved a lot of lives. This is a powerful example of disruptive innovation. Focus on what I call vertical innovation, or developmental innovation, which combines elements to create an innovation on a higher order. And remember that there is essentially an infinite amount of pent-up value and opportunity in the emergent domain waiting to be tapped. Use the tool of scenario planning to map out different possible futures for your business so you can spot the early signs of one of them materializing. Collaborate with others to multiply your power and to unlock value in domains and dimensions that are unavailable to individuals. This means learning to work with people who are very different from you and to coordinate with different personality types and working styles. How could you combine the essence of several available elements together into a new innovation for your business? And how could you integrate these pieces to create something on a higher order that solves a bigger problem or produces higher level value? What are 3 or more diverse possible future scenarios for the future of your career or business? And what would be the signs that each of them is unfolding? Who could you collaborate with or even partner with to multiply your productivity and effectiveness?